All right, let's start here. This is our 25th edition in the Laws of Life. Tonight, our question is, what is the divine law of abundance, and how can an aspirant best harness it? I've shuffled the cards and laid them out, and our spread is the starting point is the Three of Pentacles, right side up. The counterpoint is the World, upside down. The World is number 21, which makes it a 3 in the major arcana. The challenge is the Knight of Swords, right side up. The purpose is the Moon, right side up. The Moon is the 23rd card in the major arcana, which makes it a 5. That's not right at all. It's the 18th card. I'm looking at Roman numerals, and I've forgotten my lifetime as a Roman. Anyway, it's a 9, making it a 9. It's an 18, making it a 9. The, as I said, the endowment is the King of Swords, right side up. The destiny is the 5 of Swords, upside down. The going on to the Pillar of Revelation, the real question is the High Priestess, upside down, and the High Priestess is a 2, which makes a 2 in the Major Arcana. The next card is also from the Major Arcana. It's the 5th one. The Hierophant is in the position of hidden dimensions or unseen forces and factors. It's upside down. The spiritual ideal is the 9 of Cups, upside down. And the culmination is the 5 of Pentacles, right side up. So we have 3 fives. The card of destiny is the 5 of Swords. The unseen factor is the Hierophant. And the culmination is the 5 of Pentacles. You put those together, you have 15, and that's a 6, and that has no relevancy whatsoever. We have, I think, 2 nines. We have the 9 of Cups in the position of the spiritual ideal, and we have the 9 of the Moon, which makes a 9, 18 equals 9, in the position of the purpose. And we have 4 major cards being the World.
2 threes.
What?
Are there 2 threes?
Are there 2 threes? I think there probably are.
1 and 2?
Oh, the first 2 cards are
threes.
21, the World, and the 3 of Pentacles, the 3. Very good. I had gotten that earlier, but I forgot about it. The 4 majors are the World, the Moon, the High Priestess, and the Hierophant. So there are 4 majors, 3 swords, no rods, 1 cup, and 2 pentacles. And the interesting thing here is if we start with the real question, not a place I usually start, but if we start there, the High Priestess is sitting in front of a curtain, and she's covered, and the curtain is covered with all kinds of fertility symbols. She is the goddess of fertility. And the curtain is pulled back, revealing the inner side, the castle in the distance, and the inner side of life. So in order to understand the nature of abundance, we have to draw the curtain back that veils the inner side of life and become aware of the inner dimensions. This is why I've posted the picture of the Titan's Goblet by Thomas Cole up on the screen. This is a tremendous example of abundance. It's the overflowing abundance of God's life, of divine life, that comes down and nurtures the life on earth. And so we have here the actual description of the divine law is in the real question, and that is, quoting Genesis, be fruitful and multiply. This is actually from chapter 1. God blessed them. This is after the 5th day. God blessed them, saying to them, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth and conquer it. And, of course, people insist on misinterpreting that, but it's fairly, the emphasis here, as this reading will demonstrate, is on multiplication. We're not down here to just be fruitful and enjoy life, be fruitful and find pleasure. It's be fruitful, multiply, and gain dominion. And so whether we're talking about, anytime we're talking about anything, we're to fill the goblet of earth with divine life. That's what we multiply. And whether this is the way in which spirit dominates form through lifetime after lifetime, experience after experience of filling the potential of earth's being with the essence of spirit. And so, again, it's that division between the inner and the outer life that we see in the High Priestess. The curtain is drawn back so that we can see the divine perfection with which we're meant to fill life on earth, whatever we do, with its abundance. And therefore, we take on a very important role, and that is, without the human being, there would be no meaning to the admonition, be fruitful, multiply. Something's got to be fruitful, and he's just created man and woman, and he blesses them, and he talks to them and says, be fruitful, multiply. And, of course, that's commonly interpreted by horny old Dodgers as to mean have a lot of sex and create a lot of babies. But it applies to every aspect of human life, and it's not limited to that interpretation in Genesis. It's fill every dimension of life that you can with abundance. So that's the law of abundance. Be fruitful and multiply. One of the great examples of this, I'm getting ahead of myself, but I think one of the great examples of this is from the interview in From Heaven to Earth series with Luther Burbank. And Dr. Lykman asked Burbank about how he made such rapid improvements upon the plants that he was working with. He would get an order to create a new species of this, that, or the other thing, and he would do it within a year or two. And this was unlike anything else. And he said, well, what I would do is I would plant thousands of seeds from this variety. And then when they all started to sprout, I would pick the two or three of them that were the most promising. And, of course, he used his intuition to this. And then I would harvest their seeds and plant a whole new generation. I didn't wait around for them to come to complete fullness, but I took the seeds of the best, and I planted a whole new set from that. And in a very short period of time, he was able to make major changes in the species or the variety that he was working with. And, of course, it was his intuition that guided him in doing that. Well, in a sense, that's a symbol for the way we're to be fruitful and multiply. It's an adjunct or an admonition to the soul to engage in lifetime after lifetime, and in each lifetime work to multiply the talents and skills of the human personality, and therefore to increase the subtlety and mastery of the physical form by the soul. Be fruitful, multiply. So we're talking about multiplication here. To go back to the beginning, the starting point is the Three of Pentacles. The Three of Pentacles is a fellow, a sculptor or whatever, who's working on one of the three pillars in a church or a cathedral. This reminds us of two things. First of all, in order to sense the drama of what he's doing, you need to put this in a larger perspective. He's not just carving or sculpting a pillar. He's working to build a cathedral. And in a very real sense, he's working to build a temple to God through all that he does. The second thing is that these three pillars are reminiscent of the three pillars of the Tree of Life, going back to our class of several years ago on In the Beginning. And it seems most appropriate because, of course, one of the classes that we spent in that, not one of the classes, but one of the sessions that we spent investigating the Tree of Life, we spent on working on the left-hand pillar there, and several of them, and it looks like he's about halfway up the pillar, and so there are specific spheres or sephira that would be give us the key to there are divine spheres, as we're talking about in the current class on divine emanations of the all-beauteous mind. And abundance would be one of these emanations. Abundance is the... So as we learn to embrace the bigger picture, we harness the potential for abundance. We go from finite to infinite, and that's one of the big keys. And one of the great things that about human growth is that the real growth occurs in our thinking capacity, not in our physical achievements or stature or status, but in our ability of the mind to embrace larger and larger dimensions. As long as we're here in the physical plane, our thinking tends to be finite, limited, focused. And that helps us get our work done here, and it's very important. But the true energy of abundance is a idea in the mind of God. And so to fully tap it and learn to express it in the multiplication sense, we have to understand that we can't approach this in a finite way. We have to approach it in terms of infinity. The divine mind is infinite in nature and in possibilities. It is said that at the mental level, if you take one of the seeds of an archetype, for example, there's an infinite number of ways to express that archetype emotion at the astral level or the physical level. And it's one point on the mental plane, but produces an infinity or an abundance of options in terms of expression. And if you're able to identify with that archetypal point, then you have the key to working with infinity. So the work here of the Three of Pentacles is to build a sense of identification with the inner forces of abundance, and to learn not to try to capture or embrace this abundance in its entirety, because that's not possible as long as we live in a finite world, but to always act with it with the sense of tapping the unfettered possibilities of divine life. We must learn not to put limits on our thinking, not to put limits on our possibilities. Almost everybody does this. We talk about an energy crisis, and well, up until now, all we have done is solve. We've had a tremendous expansion of energy uses through the use of oil, not just to run our furnaces and our automobiles, but also to create plastics and a whole variety of other substances. The versatility of oil is tremendous in this way. It only makes sense, since one of the basic elements of Earth life is carbon. And hydrocarbons are a basis of oil. And all the uses of oil are a great symbol of the abundance of divine life, and how one commodity can be used in so many different ways. But we tend to think and let this limit our thinking to finite levels. So I remember when I worked for Standard Oil of Ohio way back in my youth, in my early 20s, I was constantly exposed to statistics about how we only had 60 to 70 years of proven resources left, and that was back in the 60s and early 70s, i.e., by now we should have run out of it. But of course, that was based on known resources of the time, reserves. And now they've discovered all these other reserves. I was just reading today that the oil that can be fracked is not only in North Dakota and the Montanas, but they're finding rich reserves of oil in southern Illinois. And so in spite of the fact that Illinois has screwed around and placed a huge debt on its citizens, they may not be completely, now southern Illinois may not be too happy about shipping oil to northern Illinois up to Chicago unless they make some reforms. But this is a symbol. There's three to four times the known reserves of oil and gas extant today, proven reserves, than there were 50, 60 years ago, even though we've been using it at an unprecedented rate. And frankly, any reasonable person would look at this and say, well, these known reserves are all within drillable distance of the surface of the earth, whether in the oceans or underneath the oceans or underneath dry land. It doesn't make much difference. They're all reserves that are within 4 to 5 miles of the surface of the planet. And who knows what kind of oil reserves there are beneath that? It makes sense because the planet Earth itself is basically one big hydrocarbon. The sun itself is probably one big hydrocarbon, but a flame, which is why we get its energy. And so we should stop putting limitations on God's capacity to support our energy addiction or our own ability to tap into it. And this thinking that there's only a certain amount of oil and we have to restrict our use of it lest we run out is a very finite kind of thinking which troubles many human beings. Most human beings simply don't have the imagination to embrace the infinite. And this is one of the big problems here. It's a problem that it shows up in many of these cards. And because the law of abundance is the law of being able to tap the unending and infinite possibilities of the divine while focused in the physical plane. And that's the key to fertility. If you have one seed, the average thinker holds onto that seed and has no concept of how that one seed could be planted, and the seeds of that tree or shrub or bush or flower could then be harvested, and thousands of the same species could be propagated. Now that's multiplication, and that's something human beings are meant to discover. It's the way God works. Mental ideas are seeds that we plant in our life, and we nurture them and cause them to grow into an abundant crop of seeds that we can then constantly replant. And this is the idea here. So the law is be fruitful, multiply. We're here not just to observe the status quo, but to multiply. And then we come to the counterpart, which is the world. And it's a clear message here. The world card, there's a woman representing the world. I guess that's Gaia. There are four symbols of the one of the crosses of the zodiac in each corner. And the world is condensed into finite thinking. And one of the problems here is the is that we have only just begun to tap the infinite possibilities of the world and its energy, whether we're talking about oil or talking about atomic energy, releasing the power of the atom, or even exploring the many different possibilities. But there's a idea here that the Earth is a finite point bathed in all different kinds of astrological forces, all different kinds of divine forces, and we need to learn to harness this and tap the rich potential in each force and energy. But when we're talking about the law of abundance, we have to put it in terms of energy, not form. Simply amassing a great deal of money or oil or whatever does not constitute wealth or abundance. It constitutes a tremendous responsibility, but you have to use it and recognize that this is the real pipeline does not run from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico. The real pipeline runs from our life to the divine life through the mind. And that's what we have to construct. That's what our fellow in the Three of Pentacles is constructing, one of the three major pipelines to the mind of God. And that gives us control and dominion over the whole earth and every aspect of it, including the ability to harness and shape astrological forces bathing the planet. I think one of the interesting things about the counterpoint, the world card, are the four symbols in the corners representing astrological forces. They also represent the four elements of air, earth, fire, and water. And part of working with the law of abundance is to recognize the need to have all four of those elements in balance one with the other in order to create a genuine abundance. Because if you have, well, we discovered over the weekend, if you have too much water, that isn't going to work. You need a certain amount of water to raise your flowers and plants and water your trees. But right now, North Georgia is soggy from being water soaked. And we spent quite a bit of the weekend bailing water that was trying to intrude into our basement. Didn't succeed, but we took out probably about 75, 80 gallons of water that wasn't where it was supposed to be. And I tried to tell the weather gods about that, and they weren't amused. I said, "We got our instructions here. We're to dump this water right here. We can't make any exceptions for you, no matter how much you want." So there you go. Be careful where you plant your Titan's cup. It will overflow. So we have to have these four elements, air, fire, earth, and water, all in balance and all in proper cooperation with one another. And the use of the mind is, I mean, this is what we learn from the Tarot, after all. The four suits, each one represents a different element. The fire of mind, the air of spirit, the water of the emotional level, the cups. I mean, what better kind of card for working with water than a cup? You can fill your cup and drink it, take it with you. And then the pentacles representing earth, fire, air, earth, and water, your four energies. So it's important to understand how perfectly life is designed and what it means to harness all of these in the pursuit of dominion over, this is why the magician is shown with each of the suit of the tarot, each of the four elements, a sword, a rod, a cup, and a pentacle. He's not in the spread, but the magician has mastered the use of the elements and is able to tap and express the divine law of abundance. Okay, so we go up to the challenge, the Knight of Swords, and succinctly this would say that the phrase "be fruitful and multiply" is a key part of serving the plan of God, and the need to develop a one-to-one relationship with spiritual possibilities and see yourself as a companion with divine life. And the more we grow in skill, the more we're able to tap the various possibilities that are known in heaven but haven't been realized here on earth. That's what we should be. We should, the person, the agent of light should be a connoisseur of possibilities, one that contemplates the possibilities and allows, becomes a visionary of the potential, because the mental level is a level of potential and potency that we have to tap and then express in our own life. And if we fail to do that, that's our own failing. We haven't linked the visible dimensions of life with the invisible dimensions of life. And that's one of the keys here. Linking, serving the plan, building this companionship with the divine. We come then to the purpose, and we have the moon, number 23rd, number 18. I keep getting that wrong. There's only 22 cards. I don't know why I keep on talking about number 23. I guess it's the untapped potential here. So the moon is number 18, or a 9, which puts it in harmony with the 9 of Cups. And the moon itself is reminiscent of a cup or a goblet, as in Titan's cup. And the idea is to fill it. And but again, the moon is, even though it's a physical form, the moon in the sky is almost in a different dimension, and yet it controls the element of water and other energies on the physical plane, on the earth. It controls the tides and the weather patterns and so on, and energy levels, as we know from the full moon. So again, we're this is a question of learning to work with the divine design for energy expression. And one of the it's interesting to go back to the original statement in Genesis. God blessed them, saying to them, "Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, and conquer it." Well, all right. What does that mean, to fill the earth and conquer it? It means that that's an important part of it, not just to multiply, but to fill the earth, to fill it to its, to bring it to fulfillment, to bring it up to its full spiritual potential. And that's a large part of what we're doing here. We are working, laboring in the garden of the earth so as to create, to help it become a sacred planet, and to unleash its spiritual potential so that it isn't finite, but is in fact infinite. It discovers its infinite nature hidden deep within itself. Okay, I'm going to unmute here and ask for any comments and questions at this point so far. Any comments or questions so far in the reading? Anybody? Okay, well, let me go on then. Our endowment is the King of Swords, right side up. And that suggests that we learn best to work with the divine law of abundance by understanding that God always works abundantly, doesn't create anything that is only one-dimensional, and every facet or every circumstance in which we find ourselves in our life has unlimited potential if we look at it that way. If we look at it through finite eyes, we can become discouraged. But if we look at it and understand that, as we will see in a moment, we are the link, then it becomes, if we learn to honor the will of God, the design of God in what we do, we have the capacity to tap this infinite nature of abundance. And there are no limits to what can be done. This has been demonstrated so many times, it's difficult for me to understand why people don't grow up understanding this. But when you consider the remarkable inventiveness of a Nikola Tesla, or the amazing creativity of a Luther Burbank, or anybody of that nature, the insights of an Albert Einstein, it should become very clear, or the creative genius of a Shakespeare or an Emerson, it should be instantly clear that these people transcended the finite nature of their own lives and thinking, and tapped into the thinking of the mind of God and were inspired by it. This is the way creativity is supposed to work. I don't take one or two ideas and then try to build 40 or 50 years of teaching and writing on those one or two ideas. I don't have any doubt that when I sit down to write a book, those the ideas that are necessary will come to me, and many ideas I've never thought of before, because that's the nature of the mind of God. The mind of God is infinite in its possibilities, and the human mind is meant to tap into this. And the key to doing that is honoring the design of life as God's made it, not wondering whether there could be six-legged giraffes or whether you could mate them with sheep and come up with a completely different animal. That's maybe entertaining in the cartoons or in science fiction, but it's we seek out the divine patterns, the divine seeds as created by God, and then try to figure out, okay, what can I do with this, and how can I multiply them through the work I do? Our job is to multiply what God has created. And that's our key to harnessing the abundance, the law of abundance, is to take what God has made and through our work and our ingenuity, multiply it, make it more powerful, make it more appropriate. And each one of us has that capacity somehow in our lives to do this. The what we're tapping here with the King of Swords is what DK at some point refers to as the coherent essence of thought, which is basically fire. And we're trying to learn to use that by what in the light, is, light within this class, the light of the soul class, Patanjali talks about is the modifications of the mind. As long as we don't have control of the mind, we are the victim of those modifications. But as we learn to control them and focus the mind, we can focus our thoughts on the seeds God has created and download them into our life. And into our thinking, and then incubate them so they multiply and we get the same creative strength of God that we may not imagine that we can tap. That's the endowment. Then the card of destiny follows immediately after that, the Five of Swords. And the Five of Swords is a fellow planting a sword vertically in the earth. There are two swords crossed in the foreground and two more swords over his shoulder going up to heaven. And he's therefore establishing the link. The human being, the human mind, is the link between divine abundance and the magnification of life on earth, so that it too expresses divine abundance. I've already mentioned Luther Burbank as an example of this process. He epitomizes this magnification perfectly. Another example that we can do, this time from mythology, would be the Midas touch. Midas asked for a special boon from the god Bacchus, and it was given to him. And this was the ability that everything he touched turned to gold. Only he forgot to limit that, and so if he touched food he was about to eat, it turned to gold and he couldn't eat it. Or if he picked up his goblet of wine, the wine turned to gold, and he couldn't drink it. So he was facing starvation because he didn't know how to apply and focus this divine ability, this divine potential to change any substance into gold. And fortunately, before the Christ went to the marriage at Cana, he learned how to change water into wine without making everything he touched wine. So it can be done, but the Midas touch is a humorous story that reveals our capacity to contact the esoteric or the divine patterns of abundance and translate and transfer it to the earth plane. And that's what our role is to do, is to use these two antennae, these two swords as antennae that bring the force of abundance down through our own work and activity and then into those two swords laying in the foreground. And we are to learn our own particular Midas touch of bringing the inner essence of divine life into manifestation of the physical plane. And in doing this, we make the invisible visible, you see. And we make the... Notice how many of these cards, swords and pentacles alike, have that transparent attitude where, you, for example, in the Three of Pentacles, you can see right through the physical pillars and you can see the clouds beyond. And so it's not just a question of drawing back the curtains in the High Priestess, but we develop a constant awareness that the seeming solid finiteness of life on Earth is just gauze, and behind that is the reality of divine life. And so when we look at a finite setting or condition in the physical plane, we should look right through it to the divine. And that's where the vision of abundance comes in so important and becomes so important. Okay, again, let me unmute and ask for any comments or questions before we go into the pillar of revelation. Any comments or questions so far about the law of abundance and applying it? Anybody?
So, Carl, if it seems to follow suit then that as we work with our mind, we also can work with the law of abundance so much more effectively.
Absolutely. But the key here is not just working with the mind, but learning to work with the mind in its infinite dimension, because lots of people have learned to work with the mind finitely. and they use their thinking skills to put limits on what they even try to do.
That's right.
And
that's
so we have to break down that finite, I can't do it, or the finite curse of doubt. And we have to be able to embrace the infinite and understand that our mind is bifurcated, as it were. It's split into two dimensions, the finite and the infinite. And we're meant to link those two together. And in doing that, we discover the key to the law of abundance. We discover the ability to look at a finite event or condition and see the infinite possibilities behind it. To learn to work with the seed, not the partial result.
Working with that seed.
Other comments or questions? Well, then let's sally forth to the pillar of revelation. And our first stop is, of course, the seventh position, the position of the real question, and that's the High Priestess. I already talked about the High Priestess card. But what this card is asking us is what it reiterates the fertility aspect, as I've mentioned. But the question is, what is the inner essence of multiplying this aspect of life? Whatever we're thinking about, what is the inner essence of multiplication? What is the seed that holds the secret to infinity in this dimension of life? And asking that question is what pulls the curtain back. And it may take a while, but we begin to see how all these different elements fit together. So a corollary question would be, what are we activating in our life? How are we trying to become a link between the finite and the infinite in our life? We don't have to be a great inventor or electrical genius like a Nikola Tesla or a great writer like a William Shakespeare, but how are we focusing on some facet that interests us and multiplying it and creating a multiplication out of it? And generally speaking, this can, of course, be applied to personal growth. How are we interacting with other people to express the multiple facets of blessing or forgiveness or whatever it might be? We can look at this one of the keys is, if you have a repetitive condition in your life, a lot of times we think, oh, I failed to learn from that. Generally speaking, that's the wrong message. Repetition tends to show, sometimes it could be that you failed to learn the message, but if you learn the lesson and put it to rest 25 years ago and it comes back, this is a new turn in the spiral, a new level of multiplication. So what did I learn 25 years ago that I can now powerfully apply to this new condition, this new situation? And in some, this may be a greater measure of personal strength. It may be a greater measure of companionship with God. It might be a greater capacity for blessing. But the important thing here is let your life be guided by the inner dimensions. Pull the curtain back and contemplate the abundance of life within your life. In your meditations, ask the soul to reveal to you the seed of abundance, the seed of potential magnification, multiplication, that you are working on to cultivate in this particular lifetime. And you may be surprised by the insight that you gain, but this is a link that you should cultivate and work diligently to perfect. It's your doorway. It's the entranceway to the inner dimensions of life. We are here in the finite plane. We may not be able to control that as much as we would like, but we can certainly find ways to multiply our interaction with the finiteness of physical life. And this, of course, just as an aside here, but relevant to the question of the evening, this is one of the reasons why humanity is 60 billion souls strong. God isn't waiting for one or two individuals like the Christ or the Buddha to say, oh, I've done a good job with creativity. 60 billion is insurance that the divine plan will be fulfilled. It's not likely that it will be fulfilled in every single human being, but the way this works is, for example, 100 years ago, there was a great focus of creativity in the human kingdom, human inventiveness. And within the space of 20 years, Wilbur and Orville flew the first plane, and the radio was invented, and Henry Ford rolled out the first Model T, and so on and so on and so on. And so there was a great deal of this, but the radio is a good example of that. We, historically, we credit Marconi with developing the radio, but there were actually about a dozen different people working in different locations around the globe, all doing an important part of the development that led to the radio. Sir Oliver Lodge was one, and Hertz was one. Avis wasn't part of it, but the other Hertz, Megahertz. I think his first name was actually Heinrich or something like that. But there was all these, and Marconi did his bit too, but he kind of had the best press agent. And so the interplanes, the higher dimensions, the behind the curtain work here is such that it never relies on one individual. Massive changes like that or new developments inspire dozens of people simultaneously. And one of the things about science is that they often get together at conventions and compare notes and say, oh, I'm doing that. I'm working on that too. Let's get together and share our results. And they sometimes are more inclined to do that than in other fields of endeavor. So when we do solve the energy crisis, so to speak, if it needs to be solved, it will be the next step forward in energy control will, or energy production will be, there will probably be two dozen people inspired all at the same time. And one of them will succeed. And that's the way in which this works. So there's 60 billion souls, and that gives us all different kinds of rich experiences and possibilities. And that repetition, that redundancy, is actually part of abundancy, redundancy and abundancy here. It guarantees that the experiment will be successful, it will be productive, it will be fruitful, and it will multiply. That we're not just relying on a single inventive person, but if that single inventive person fails to follow all the clues, somebody else will step in and be inspired and follow the clues. And so the sheer numbers of people doing the work will lead to a revolution. And that's an important part of the work of so that we can see the relevancy of asking the question, what am I activating in my life to lead to this abundance in the area that I am focused on? Our next card is the card of the unseen dimensions, and that's the Hierophant. And this is the fact that the mental plane is the home of divine possibilities, the archetypal seeds of life. And there is a force and an intelligence at that level that can be thought of as the central core of the emanations of the all-beauteous mind. And this energy, in what I'm trying to say here is that the intelligence of life itself at the inner dimensions is seeking to link itself through willing companions, intelligent companions, and ground itself in the physical plane. It's not a question of a secret such as, I know a secret and you don't. Ooh, hoo, hoo. You can't outsmart me. I'm going to hold on to my secret. No, the inner planes, the mind of God, wants this information to come down, this inspiration, this guidance to come down into the physical plane and into the minds of men and women so that they are supported in their efforts to be fruitful and multiply. So that's the hidden factor, the hidden force, is there's tremendous activity at the mental level. And you've heard me refer to this from time to time, and perhaps have read in Alice Bailey, where the Tibetan talks about the fact that the Renaissance and other major breakthroughs in science and the arts is the direct result of mental stimulation of creativity and science by the hierarchy. And so what this is doing is completing the picture drawn in the Five of Swords. It's the link, that's each of us, the agent of light, is given two swords and is led in such a way as to help him or her develop the skills of pulling the curtain back. And abundance goes looking for people who are capable of making life more abundant and then inspires them. But we have our role to play in preparing ourselves and doing the work so that we can make life more abundant, whether it's in terms of psychological understanding or in terms of creativity or in terms of science or religion or education or what have you. So there is that response. It's not a response. It is the impetus of higher intelligence to establish this link with the personality. We then go on to the card of spiritual ideal in the ninth spot, and we have the Nine of Cups in the ninth spot. Nice place for it. And, of course, this is the card of fulfillment. And here's this very confident young man, journeyman on the, that's probably Sir Stalbert right there, confident in his abilities and skills, and his work is to fulfill the potential of each of these nine cups there, and he has priorities, he knows what he's trying to do first and foremost. But he is the competent link between heaven and earth and is working constantly to make whatever he works at better, more fulfilling, more complete. A good example of this that you've heard me yap about before would be our favorite new world-class garden 10 miles to our south, Gibbs Garden. Here's a man that started a very successful landscaping business and Gibbs Landscaping, and 35 years ago or so bought a piece of swampland in North Georgia, in Ball Ground, Georgia, of all places, and he got about 300 acres. He probably got it for a good price because the person who sold it to him thought most of it was worthless, swampland. But he's taken that swampland and used his landscaping genius and skills to drain the swamp, except where he plants ferns, and they're great ferns. And he's built a showcase botanical gardens that people can come to and wander through for a price. And he opened that up a year ago. You've heard me talk about that. It is currently open again now that it's spring and whatever. And he's taken a piece of swampland and turned it into a magical fairy kingdom of nature. And it's very difficult for anybody to come to this place and not go away refreshed and touched by the serenity. And of course, he didn't know he was doing this, but he attracted a local angelic force that has become the angel supervising the gardens. And so he's working hand in hand with the inner dimensions. He's pulled back the curtain. I don't know, I don't have a clue as to whether he's seen anything in there, but he knows how to do this at least at unconscious levels, based on my conversations with him. And he has created a fulfilling expression here on Earth of a perfect example would be fruitful and multiply. He's taken the potential of this piece of land, which the original farmer probably thought was just wasteland, and he's made a spectacular sanctuary for people to come and be refreshed and reestablish their own natural link with the inner dimensions of life. So that's what we're talking about here with the Nine of Cups. The spiritual ideal is fulfillment, fulfilling the commandment, be fruitful and multiply. And he's done that to a fairly well in this. According to Gibbs, it was always an intention to make this public. But according to many of his friends, they, for years, they've been pestering him. You ought to make this public so other people can enjoy this. We would drive down Yellow Creek Road all the time, almost every day we go down to it to get to the bank and grocery store and whatnot. And we had no clue that this Garden of Eden on Earth existed. Of course, there were no signs or anything. Welcome to Gibbs Garden. There are now, because otherwise you'd never find the place. But we'd drive blissfully by and not realize that there was this gem of a gardens, this gem of beauty and serenity right there so close. And so this is the type of fulfillment that the law of abundance brings, the responsibility of fulfilling and implementing these inspirations and playing your own part in drawing back the curtain between heaven and earth.
Well, we actually consider it part of our abundance.
Right. Rose is just saying that, you probably heard her, but she just said we actually consider it part of our abundance. Absolutely. It's when we first moved out here, it was not open, and we read nothing about it, heard nothing about it. But 16, 17 years later, suddenly here's this great gift of enrichment to us. And we try to spend a day or two, an afternoon or two each week, walking through it. And even though we're familiar with virtually every tree and bush and shrub, there's also always something wonderful about the being able to see the vitality of divine life expressing itself through new blooms and new life suddenly reappearing in the spring. That's what's going on now. And trees that had not been in bloom or even budding a week ago are suddenly bursting with radiant glory. And it's a delight and a constant reminder of how divine life works. It's a great symbol of how something in the finite plane can reveal and does reveal. And as we develop the eyes to see, we are able to see through the finite form, whatever it is, and see the radiant glory of divine life pouring through. And Gibbs Garden is a tremendous example of that. And it is an act of patience and piety rolled into one, combined with a great deal of creativity and a sense of beauty. So that's the fulfilling aspect of this. And in turn, then, it creates an opportunity for the inner planes to reveal itself. You can imagine that in a certain number of people walking through this, and they get hundreds of people every day, thousands if it's a beautiful sunny day and not too hot, they come from all over the place, all over the world. Busloads of them. All over the world to visit and see. I don't think there are too many busloads from Ecuador coming up to. They have to go by plane or train or ship or something, but they might eventually catch a bus out of Hartsfield or whatever. But this is a great fulfillment, and you look around at human life and you can see these elements of fulfillment and understand that the abundance of divine life is constantly seeking to burst the seams of our finite points of view and burst forth in spectacular array for our benefit. And the only thing standing in its way is our lack of cooperation, our lack of companionship with God. Which brings us into the Five of Pentacles, the culmination. And, of course, this is our old standby familiar card of two pilgrims on their way to Mecca or someplace, Rio, wherever. And there is above them, and they're totally unaware of it, a beautiful window filled with harmony and grace and bursting with divine life, guiding them, and they're totally unaware of it. They're unaware of the blessing. And there's this tremendous, we're working with beatitude and blessing this week in the emanations of divine, of the beauty, all beauteous mind. And this whole pillar of revelation is a statement of blessing. The high priestess is blessing the flowers and life forms under her care. The Hierophant is blessing all of life and all of humanity. The Nine of Cups is resting on his laurels, surveying his blessings that he's worked so hard to perform. And now the Five of Pentacles, the two pilgrims, are blessed, even though they don't even recognize it. They're blessed by the inner dimension of their aspiration. And so abundance, our real key to abundance is to appreciate how perfectly life, the infinite life of God, meets our needs and helps us along the way, even when we're grouching and complaining and whining and moaning, I'm not getting any help here. We need to recognize the companionship that emerges. And it's not God that has abandoned us. If anything, is we have ignored God, not necessarily deliberately, but simply by having our nose stuck too much in the physical plane and not taking the time to look upward and say, aha, I know that the blessing of God, blessing of the soul, is hovering right over my head and it's sounding forth the sweetest music possible. So that's basically what we need to do is strive to become a companion of divine abundance. It's not something that only, the sun does not shine on the faithful alone. It shines on the faithless and the faithful alike. And it's up to us to take advantage of this great opportunity and to create the link. And that's how we, the average aspirant, best harnesses the law of abundance by taking to heart the injunction, be fruitful, multiply, and share my blessings with all of life. Okay, I'm going to stop there. I'm going to unmute the mute and take any comments or questions now that we've completed this examination. Comments and questions.
Well, this was just a marvelous reading. I mean, I just feel like it was I've just been given a bouquet of so many things to think about here.
Is that the okay bouquet?
The okay bouquet. I love the expression of playing your part and drawing back the curtain between heaven and earth. And the story about Gibbs Gardens is just a wonderful representation of what can be done. I know every time I'm in an airplane, I love the perspective that I have from up there.
38,000 feet up?
Huh?
38,000 feet in the air?
And I always look down and just see the productivity of humanity and how, you know, fields have been planted and roadways and all the businesses that are formed. And, you know, it's just this marvelous, you know, I want to say it's just like a quilt of everything that people have created. And I always appreciate that. And just the, well, of course, the springtime now, we can liken abundance to that. I mean, how can you not see abundance?
Right.
In everything that's going on now. And just the fact of people, you know, with all their different ideas, that's true. I mean, it isn't just one person coming up with it. It's, you know, all of these people contributing to some new development. So, I mean, this was marvelous. I have to say, too, one thing that I thought about during this reading was the abundance of what has happened from the time I first took active meditation, you know, your very first course.
Uh-huh.
Because I never would have thought that all of this would have been presented to me. I mean, it's just been marvelous to think that I'd be listening to the laws of life. You know, so it's really been astounding.
Well, I appreciate that comment. Feel free to tell other people about it. Become a Titan's goblet. Let some of that water spill over to others. Share the water.
I'll do that.
Okay. Just don't rain on my parade.
Carl, I had two thoughts listening. I thought perhaps tonight you redefined sharing the wealth.
Uh-huh. Oh, please.
You're
making me feel like a failure.
Oh, no, not at all. But just the fact that by immersing ourselves, I look at that Titan's cup, and by immersing ourselves in our own talent, our own awareness, that that somehow, in some way, that who we are is being shared, and that everyone is open or is invited to participate.
Sure. Are you suggesting that Ronald Reagan's trickle-down theory is closer to sharing the wealth than some later versions of it? Well, anyway.
I would hope so.
Yes. Go ahead. What was your second?
Well, the other one was looking at this cup is that, and you're talking about Burbank, you know, if unless we immerse ourselves, we don't just tinker, we're not going to maybe recognize that seed that really is the one that should be planted.
Uh-huh. Good.
And that's so, I don't know, and I was thinking of the Renaissance, and that it seemed like culture, everyone was immersed in art and beauty and how contagious it can be. And you, even if you weren't wealthy, I bet there were people who in some way had some form of art in their home, that they were awakened to the beauty of art and how it lifted their spirits, or walking through their streets and looking at just the buildings and the artwork that surrounded them had to lift the consciousness of everyone.
Well, there is that factor, sure. Very good. Other comments or questions? Well, that's it for tonight. Thank you for your participation and your comments. We'll do this again in a couple of weeks with a different law. That's it. Thank you and good night.
Good night.